This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock here has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, down Seahawks facility this morning. Pete Carroll will join us at 9:30, and Brock, there are going to be a lot of questions for him this morning after his defense beat up, injured, held its own, and his mostly healthy offense did not.
Mike, I have sat in this seat. How many years have we done this on these Mondays, and obviously with the Monday Night Football today is a Tuesday morning. How many times have I sat in this seat? Have we sat in this seat? Have you ever added them up? The number of games, roughly 20 games a year because of playoffs and everything else, almost 200 times, 150 to 200 times. And almost every single Monday I've sat in this seat and I've defended Daryl Bevel. To your relentless pandering, to your relentless opinion, to your relentless dogging of everything Daryl Bevel does during a 60-minute play-calling game. And I have to be the one that just felt like for years to try to defend it. Well, you know what, Mike? You try to call plays when it's a minus 5-yard run. You try to call plays when there's penetration in the backfield. You try to call plays when you're Daryl Bevel and you're on the sidelines and you're watching that debacle of an offensive line. Try it. Try it sometime. How many times have I said that to you?
A million?
A million. Both on and off the air. Okay, there. But
you were wrong.
Last night, my friend, last night was as tough a play calling night as I can remember. Last night was, oh my gosh, I have to sit in here tomorrow morning with Salk and somehow defend that play calling. And I'm not. I'm not going to do it. That was a train wreck. That was in little nervous grasshopper didn't text you. I didn't do that. I tweeted instead that you are letting that defense totally dictate what they want to do. You are running the ball. You did not have a negative run. You didn't have a minus 6-yard run. You didn't have any of these negative plays. The actual little game of tug and war when you were watching on the sidelines, the Seahawks won a fair amount of them. Had a 9-yard run to open the game, and Chris Carson has a 4-yard run, and has a 2-yard run, has a 3-yard run, he has a 4-yard run. He has positive runs, and you just went away from it. And for the life of me, in that building, against that opponent, and against that pass rush, why you did that when you want to be a run-first team is absolutely inexplicable. Inexplicable to me last night. And to come out in a one-possession game at 10-3 in the third quarter and throw 6 passes and not run the ball one stinking time. To get a turnover and have the ball in field goal range and to go backwards and have to punt. Inexplicable, inexcusable. And it just, I can't sit here today and defend that plan, those actions, and those decisions in any way, shape, or form when it came to what the offense tried to execute yesterday.
It was hard.
It's too bad because the defense played good enough for you to win.
It was hard. It was really challenging to watch last night, and there were just a whole bunch of different things that you can lay at different people's feet, and maybe some of it's on Russell, and maybe some of it's on the offensive line. Obviously, 6 sacks in a quarter, or in a half, rather, is not what you're looking for. But I think I'm with you. The play calling was bizarre. There was a time in this game where Chris Carson was averaging 4 yards per carry, and the passing game was averaging 1.2 yards per dropback. Yet for whatever reason, they had more than twice as many passes as runs. It was as if the play caller was not watching the game. And then they finally managed to make it a one-score game. They get a stop to start the half. They get the ball, and they throw it 3 times 3 and out. They get the ball back again. And they throw it 3 times 3 and out, and their entire offensive output for the third quarter is 6 passes, 0 first downs. Pete Carroll cuts 7, tries to explain what the heck happened and why that was on him. I'm sorry, cut 9.
Unfortunately, we wanted to do better than in the third quarter. You know, I got shy to take a couple shots and look at a couple things, and it got them out of rhythm a little bit. And then once after the first 2 drives, we got back and mixed stuff and worked it, but. It was my fault. I got him trying a little bit too hard in there to take a couple shots, see if we could bounce something back and get back into the game quickly, and I shouldn't have done that.
I appreciate you covering there, Pete. I really do, man. That's what the head man does, what Pete has always done here. He's going to defend his guys tooth and nail. And when he sits in with us here, Mike, at 9:30, I'm sure he will do absolutely the same, right? That's his responsibility. He's a head man. It starts and it ends with him. But to say that it got him out of rhythm, no, it did not. Okay, that first drive of the game, you have 3rd and 1.5. You have third and 1.5 at the 43-yard line. You've actually moved them. You moved them quite well, right? Just run the ball.
Is that the one where they came out and empty?
Yeah, just run the ball.
How about you at least threaten to run the ball?
If what?
what are we doing? Just threaten to run the ball.
I don't like this.
I honestly
don't like this position.
Welcome to my life.
I don't like this position
You could on third. I mean, you run the ball. I am of the belief and have been told and my understanding of the theory of running the football primarily and having a balanced attack is twofold. One, it's safe. I guess threefold. One, it's a safe way and a physical way of moving the ball up and down the field. You can dominate your opponent. Two, you can wear out your opponent, which allows you to do more and more later in the game as they're exhausted from your amount of ball control and also the physical way in which you're playing. And then finally, three, you set up all kinds of options through your play action because the other team has to respect the run.
Yes.
If all of those things are true and you're forcing them to respect your running game, why in the world would third and short be an empty situation where you're not even threatening play action?
Yep.
What is the point of everything you're doing?
You got man coverage. You got what you want. I don't care. I don't really care. And I would add D, E, and F on those elements, Mike, that your quarterback needs it. This quarterback is at his very best, especially when he didn't have Doug Baldwin. And not necessarily trusting the whole operation around him. Your O-line is at the very best. And Big Ray Roberts was all over this in the postgame, and he's right. Jermaine Defetti's a physical guy. If you watch that in the first drive or so, he smacks Khalil Mack right in the face, and he's driving him back. And Khalil's like, easy, big fella. He's like, no, not easy. Just keep smacking that dude in the face. Hit him in the face. Ethan Posick pancakes the guy on the second run of the game, pancakes him over the pile, right? And there's almost a little skirmish there. That is what those guys are wired to do. And then lastly, when you are in a road environment and you get an empty and you get in a gun, guess what happens to the decibels in that building? And all of a sudden they've got their chosen one, man, the greatest since Mike Singletary and Urlacher and the 85 Bears is wearing 52 right there. He is the savior. So they are at a fever pitch. So all of those things play against you. Run the football. And Russell, by the way, you've got to run it too, man. You have got to do the zone read action off of it. You've got to be involved. When you're the best run team in this league, man, you played an active role in it. And I think he's got to be willing to do that, and they've got to be willing to do something.
I think
of that.
The thing that gets me more than anything else, and we've had calls to run the football forever, Brock, and you're right, there have been times you've said to me, well, for what? They're not running effectively, and my only response is that's because they're not doing it enough and that eventually it'll start to have some success, kind of like the way Chicago did last night.
Yes.
Over time, the running game started to have more success because you loosen things up. But last night it was having success right from the jump.
That was
And I think more than anything, and that's why today is a day where everybody is going to pile on, is you could see it with your own eyes on television that they were having success, and yet for whatever reason we're hesitant to use it. And it just confirms everything I think about the NFL, which is that coordinators are so pass happy that they only use the run as some sort of a joke to set up the pass. Yeah, I know we have to run the ball sometimes. What I really want to do is play action. Yep. What I really want to do is spread. Look at how smart I am with all my concepts. And I'm not accusing Brian Schottenheimer of this specifically. I'm accusing offensive coordinators of this in general.
Well, the problem,
look at how smart I am. Look at all my cool route concepts.
So that's all
look
fine.
At the way
Hold
I
on.
Get this guy into single coverage.
That's all great.
Get out of here.
But there wasn't any of that either. There was not a tight end screen, a running back screen, a slot screen. There wasn't sprint draw. There wasn't draw. There wasn't trap. There wasn't just any of that creativity either. You just kind of sat back there as a lame duck. And you let them dictate to you. Again, unfortunately, I hate to spend 9 minutes because the defense played their butts off.
I was going to say, this is what I was going to get to, is this team's played pretty poorly for 2 weeks and could easily be 2-0. And in some ways, that's really frustrating, and in other ways, it actually gives me a lot of confidence that you come home, if you can get it going and win a couple of these games, that you might actually be able to have more talent and more success than anybody thought this team had, certainly through the first two games of the year. But you're going to have to keep belief alive here. You're going to have to make sure that they don't quit over these next couple of games thinking that they're not good, that an offense doesn't go, oh my God, we had 80 yards of output through much of the game, we better just forget about it. You need to find a way to keep everybody on track, and it's going to be a big challenge for Pete, I think, over these next couple of weeks. Looking forward to talking to him at 9:30. Right now, need to know.
need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Confounding game for the Seahawks yesterday as they lose to the Bears 24-17 on Monday Night Football. The game wasn't quite that close, although they did have a shot late. Russell Wilson sacked six times. The Seahawks gained just 1 yard of offense in the third quarter. We just spent 10 minutes talking about the problems with the play calling and their refusal to run the ball despite having a lot of success doing so. And yet, Brock, there they found themselves at the end of the game in a one-score game, and that's where I think Russell Wilson needs to do his thing. I'm not going to be critical of him for the six sacks. I'm not going to be critical of Russell Wilson for the way the offense did not work throughout much of the first three quarters. What I will be critical of are his final two plays, unfortunately. The pick six, where he stared down his receiver, in that case Penny, and the sack fumble a couple minutes later. Those simply can't happen in a one-score game when you are Russell Wilson, elite quarterback. That's 2 weeks in a row where he's had the ball late in the fourth quarter with an opportunity to win or tie, and in both cases, he turned the ball over, and now it's 3 in 2 games.
Yeah.
That is, you know how I feel about quarterbacks. Be accurate, don't turn the ball over, and in the biggest moments of the game in the fourth quarter, do your thing. He had the first two things right, and unfortunately, that third one has been wrong through 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's back-to-back weeks, and that's about 11 minutes of all the things that the Seahawks did not do, which we will spend a bunch of hours when you're an 0-2 team, and it's really a shame because Shaquille Griffin played his best game as a Seahawk. The kid was absolutely phenomenal with two picks. You know, that could he take that next step and play the ball and take the ball away? Can't do it any better than he did on a go route, and he was right on the right spot for his second interception in the game. Bradley McDougald was phenomenal. Michael Kendricks, my gosh. Whew. That was the best backup linebacker we have watched in 10 years with Pete Carroll here. The best. And he was here 3 days making that kind of an impact. That defense played their tails off. Gave up just 17 points on that side of the ball. Gave you an opportunity to win. And unfortunately, yes, your offense could not and did not deliver.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Now, 8th inning grand slam for Daniel Vogelbach yesterday is a pinch hitter that lifts the Mariners to a 4-1 win against Houston. They've now beaten the Astros 4 in a row.
Five in a row.
All right. 5 in a row.
So, in Houston, the last 5 times they've been there, yes. And Wade LeBlanc spun another beautiful game, and this team is going to win 90 games, Mike. This team is on pace. If they go 7-5... and their final 12 games this season is going to win 90, and Eddie Diaz just surpassed John Smoltz, is sitting there third all-time in saves, very much going to get to, I think, 60, and yet it's going to be one frustrating season to look back on.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, in a story that should surprise nobody, Washington State University placed Jason Gesser on home assignment while the school investigates a new accusation of sexual misconduct, which was levied yesterday by a former Cougar volleyball player that also worked as a babysitter or nanny for the Gesser family. We talked about this last week after the first article came out, and Jason Gesser, for whatever reason, decided, even though he seemed like he was kind of getting away with whatever had occurred, that he wanted to fight it. I'm not sure why. He went and penned an op-ed himself saying that he was innocent of all charges, and we said at the time, boy, I sure hope that op-ed doesn't prompt somebody else to come out of the woodwork and say, hey, you're not going to get away with that.
Yep.
And guess what happened? Yesterday, somebody came out of the woodwork, which was not surprising in any way. Won't surprise me if there are a whole lot more people who come out before this is all said and done. Jason Gesser's made some gigantic, gigantic mistakes, and now he's handling it. Just, he's like he's going to the Urban Meyer School of Crisis Management.
Yeah.
Complete disaster.
And he's going to have to, you know, pay for it. He's lost his job as the commentator in the booth, and now he is on paid leave, and more than likely, as we have watched this unfold a number of different times with different guys, and if I've said it once, I'll say it 100 times. What you do behind the scenes, what you think you can do on a text, what you think you can send via pictures, what you think can disappear, never goes away. It just does not go away. And those things done in darkness, man, I've said this a lot, do eventually come into light, and it sure certainly feels that way for Gesser in Washington.
All right, those are 3 things you need to know. Today is dark, dank, depressed, angry, a lot of bad stories. The Mariners are toast. The Gesser thing is gross. The Seahawks offense was problematic. Man, I hope we're going to be able to laugh and have a little bit of fun today.
Well, did you see the proposal, the 2 minutes?
I know you said it to me, but I actually didn't want to laugh.
Oh, that was great.
I was too annoyed. I wasn't ready.
Well, it wasn't really a laugh. It was just a feel-good tear-jerker.
I don't feel good about things like that. Two people get engaged and I'm supposed to feel good? I don't know them. What do I care about two people getting
at the Emmys, man.
The Emmys in public?
Yes.
Oh, it's even worse.
No.
Don't get prepared. Don't
watch it. You got to watch it during one of the breaks.
That sounds terrible. No, thank you. All right, let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys.
All right, you were on the sideline yesterday. You watched that game up close and personal last night. What the heck was happening? Where was the Seahawks run game that was working? What happened to Shoddy in this game?
I don't know. It was very baffling. I mean, there's so many things that you look at and you go, what the heck happened here? For example, they came out and you saw good runs by Chris Carson, and now we find out after the game that what Pete Carroll said was that Chris Carson got tired on special teams, and he only had two plays on special teams.
So what happened?
So that's kind of
what do you think happened with Carson?
I don't know. It was funny because I talked to him last week, and with the Mile High environment and all that stuff, he said that the first time he touched the ball last week, it took a lot out of him, and he struggled kind of the rest of the game. And so I don't know. I mean, there's only two special teams plays. Pete says he's valuable on special teams, but he was only out there for two. And so the next thing you know, here comes Rashad Penny in there, and then they start to get to the passing downs, and Penny stays in, and there's no C.J. Procise. And so I just wondered what happened with that rotation of running backs, because the plan initially was supposed to be more Chris Carson, and it was supposed to be, kind of Rashad Penny kind of getting a little bit, maybe less carries. And it turned out that Penny, who actually did well in the fourth quarter, ended up getting more.
Yeah, there's one word here, and this bothered me yesterday, John. I'm not sure what to make of it. I'm going to play Pete Carroll cut eight here. One of the things he said about the fourth quarter, he mentioned that Carson was quote-unquote gassed. He mentioned that he had to play on special teams. I don't know what to make of those two comments based on what you just said. But what do you, when you hear him say this...
I wanted to get Rashad going a little bit, see where he is and see where he is in his development.
I hear that word development, and it makes me really wonder what the goal is here.
Well, I mean, you can see from the way the guys were playing and how he was using things. I guess when you're talking development, it's now trying to get these young guys in. Because if you notice, Will Dissly, the rookie, started ahead of Nick Vinette. And in the fourth quarter, he did some good things, made some big catches, got a touchdown pass and all that stuff. That they really had no choice what to do at the linebacker spot. But there just seems to be a effort to get more young guys in, to see where they are with these young guys. And, of course, it's nice to experiment, but also, too, it's nicer to win. And in some cases, some of the young guys, the rookies, did work out well. In some of the other cases, other things didn't work out. But, yeah, kind of a very curious game.
Yeah, develop can kind of be looked at two different ways, right? Develop is like we just want to grow these guys. It's just what we do, and they're super talented. And Will Dissly's got touchdowns in back-to-back games. And, last year with Shaquille, he developed over the course of the year. Or you can look at develop and say, we're a developing team. This is not a competing for a Super Bowl team. This is a developmental year. And if we've got a decision to make, we're going to go with the young guys over some of the other pieces.
Yeah, and I think that, when you look at the big picture, I mean, I didn't envision this team to be a Super Bowl team. Naturally, every year you want to try to compete for the Super Bowl. What I kind of envisioned this team is to be an 8-9 win team where if things went right, maybe they can get to 10 and compete for a wild card. And all of a sudden, not that these things are out, but it's going to be that much tougher now with the 0-2 start. But since the change to the additional playoff team, that's since 92, only 11% of the teams that go 0-2 end up making it in. It's not like they're eliminated, but yeah, I guess when you look at it, it's a developmental team that still wants to win. It still needs to fix things up. Now, even more so on offense, because I thought defensively, a lot of good things happened. Once Mitch Trubisky got off that 15-play script, I mean, Seattle did a very good job of containing him, stopping the run. Sure, there was a couple series where he was able to get some things going, but I thought overall, for about after about 17, 18 plays, I thought the defense did a very good job.
Defense gave up 17 points, John, on the road in 60 minutes. Right, they gave up 17 points. That is it. You should win. You should win when the defense gives up that. And unfortunately, you gave seven back with the pick six and everything else. Tell me about the environment last night. Right, sometimes when we're watching at home, the noise and everything else doesn't always come through. How raucous, how difficult an environment was that to play in?
It wasn't all that difficult because, again, I think when you got a young quarterback like Mitch Trubisky, he gives you the chance. I mean, he gave the two interceptions. He gave a couple interceptions up, and, you know, he wasn't after about that the first 17, 18 plays. I mean, he really didn't even try to do anything downfield. I think you can see there was a good energy there with the fans because they were celebrating Brian Urlacher being honored for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You can see all his ex-teammates come out there. That was pretty good. I mean, I think you can see after they took the lead that the fans were pretty well into it, so the environment was pretty good, but it was still a winnable situation for any team going in there.
John, there's a lot of confusion over these six sacks. How many of them were on the offensive line? How many on Russell Wilson holding the ball too long? And how many on the receivers and weaponry just not giving Russell anywhere to throw it?
Yeah, I think it was all of the above because I think that you can see that there's a little bit of a lack of separation right now with the receiving group trying to get away from cornerbacks. I mean, the one guy two guys with speed, Jerron Brown has speed and, you know, David Moore has speed and certainly TJ Lockett has speed, but there was very little separation. And most of the game, there was more zone in there. They did mix some man in. And I think that you look at the offensive line, I mean, yeah, they were troubled by some of the talent that's there for the Chicago Bears, but say what you want. I mean, the Bears now have a very good defense. They have five number one picks. They've got a couple Pro Bowlers. They're developing a very good linebacking core. So that was one. And then, of course, Russell Wilson was holding onto the ball too long. And then in the fourth quarter, he had the uncharacteristic mistakes that he normally doesn't make. I mean, the pick six, which was just a very bad decision and a bad throw. And then I think what you're looking at, and I know I was talking to a couple people on the sidelines about it, is that, you know, Russell right now is trying to gain more confidence with the receiving core. And certainly without Jimmy Graham, without Doug Baldwin, you know, there's kind of a reinvention of that, and that's something that he has to try to, you know, get better at, and because at the moment, I mean, you know, he is holding on to the ball too much.
Yeah, how do you just describe that fourth quarter, the last 2 weeks, John? Right, and in the post game, there's a couple reporters asking, "Is it uncharacteristic? Is this becoming the new norm?" And some of the struggles in the fourth quarter. As you just kind of look at the last 2 weeks, game on the line, three series there in Denver in that fourth quarter. You know, last night you get a beautiful drive, you get it to one possession, and then the pick six. How do you, from your perspective, sum up these last two fourth quarters over the last couple weeks?
Well, I mean, not the full version of Russell Wilson that we're used to seeing because, I mean, you can see that he's still good enough to get those drives, and he was able to do it in the last couple of weeks. But then normally he's able to get one or two more of those drives, and that's what he's not been able to do. And so it's a matter of following up the touchdown drive, like he had the great touchdown pass last week to T.J. Lockett. Then he gets the nice drive and gets the Disley touchdown and all that. But it's like you expect one or two more, and they are not getting it at the moment. And so he's got to focus, and he's got to be able to try to make that better, and he can't make these uncharacteristic mistakes. I mean, that's the thing that the – yeah.
No, I was just going to ask you about the defense quickly. I'm sorry. Just how good they were yesterday. Brock said only given up 17 points. Michael Kendricks out of nowhere. Shaquille Griffin with two picks.
Well, and of course, Austin Calitro was able to make some good plays at middle linebacker. I mean, here he was. I mean, I know he called some plays during the preseason, you know, with the microphone in his ear. He was able to at least do that. And I thought he did a good job. I thought he made plays. I thought that, I mean, they still aren't getting the pass rush, although I think in the fourth quarter they're getting a little bit more of the pass rush. But I think overall it's like they did an exceptional job when you think about how many things that were challenged. I mean, here's Akeem King out there. He's starting. I mean, they have so many young guys and new guys. I thought the safeties played exceptional. I mean, Earl Thomas and particularly Bradley McDougal, he did some great things. Shaquille Griffin really had a sensational game as far as cornerback.
Some big nickel in that game,
sir.
Brock. You know,
yes,
I love that. All right, John, no wild card today. Your show's coming up at 10 o'clock. Thank you, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
All right, there you go. John Clayton, every morning with us at 7:15. Let's do this.
13 snaps of big nickel yesterday.
13 snaps of big
three
nickel?
Three safeties.
Wow.
Yeah, three safeties on the field.
That's big
huge.
Nickel almost, I think you would say. All right, we're going to open things up here a little. There's a lot of passion, there's a lot of irritation, there's a lot of energy out there. I want to hear from you guys. Simple question. If you could talk and have an audience with Pete Carroll today, what would you tell him? 206-421-3776. What would you tell Pete about last night, about the team, et cetera? 206-421-3776. What's your message for the coach today? We will take some of your calls, and we'll chat a little bit more next. I'm Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
206-421-3776. Got the phone lines full here. The simple question, what would you tell Pete today after a really tough loss to watch? It was a tough one to stomach. It just didn't look like the Seahawks. They started moving the ball. They ran it with effectiveness with Chris Carson. And then all of a sudden, there was no more Chris Carson. They stopped running it. They threw the ball more. They ran it with Penny instead of Carson. That is one of the more inexplicable things going on here. We're going to talk more about this at 8 o'clock, and certainly we'll ask Pete about it at 9:30. But his explanations on Chris Carson are bizarre. The guy was having a really good night, ran the ball six times for 24 yards, and all of a sudden, cut six, he disappears. This was Pete's explanation on it.
Now, he was a little gassed from working on special teams and helping us. We had some guys that were out, so he had kind of double dip. And really, I wanted to see how we could do with Rashad and give him some playing time, get him out there.
Okay, well, hold on. He says he was gassed from playing some special teams. There's a follow-up question. Cut seven.
We were so low at safeties and linebackers that he had to play. He's a fantastic special teams guy, and so he just had to stay in there. That was not the design going into the season, but this week he just had to do it and help us out. But he'll play more. There was nothing about his play that kept him out of there.
Here's the thing. That can't be true. First of all, it can't be true that that would keep you out of a game at the end of it anyway, but beyond all of that, Brock, he only played on two special team snaps, fewer than he played in last week in Denver when he had six.
Yeah.
I don't understand what happened. There's got to have been something on the sideline that went down. There has to be some sort of ancillary reason for Chris Carson riding the pine for the rest of the game. But it was not that he was being used
on
special.
No, he had two snaps. So in premise, like, that's totally right. Like, I would get that. If I didn't watch the game or know the stats, that would actually make a little bit of sense.
Not really, but okay.
But it would at least be passable. But then when you look at the numbers, that A, bizarre, doesn't add up. And then B, it was just this week. It was just this week that the declaration was made that, Chris is going to be
Chris
the guy.
Really took, I think, took the lead in the position after that game. And Rashad's got to, right now they're going to alternate, and we're going to keep working those guys and see how they do.
Well, they didn't alternate in the second half. Chris Carson didn't play, despite playing really well when he was in there. It was really
strange,
really odd. And certainly we'll ask Pete at 9:30 this morning, coming up in 2 hours. If you had an audience with him, what would you tell the coach today? 206-421-3776. Let's grab Marcus in Puyallup to get us going. Hi, Marcus. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, we've been doing better, Marcus, because I thought the defense played their butts off last night and gave this team an opportunity to get it done, and they didn't. So what would you say? What would you say to Coach Carroll if you were hanging out with us this morning?
I would say that I noticed that for the first time in 6 years, I saw a Russell Wilson who was not poised and who looked like he was concerned. And it appears that he's not playing his regular football. It appears that he's trying to be a pocket passer. He's trying to be a quarterback that he is not. And matter of fact, he's a mediocre pocket passer, but he's a phenomenal scrambler. So why are we limiting his ability?
Yeah, I thank you, Marcus, for the phone call. I don't know if I would say a mediocre pocket passer, but I totally see what your eyes were seeing in that first half. Like, what are we doing here? Like, he's not comfortable with this. He's just sitting there as a lame duck. There's not – you're watching the other side, right, move the pocket. You're watching shovel passes. You're watching motions. You're watching multiple personnel groups. You're watching two backs. You're watching zone read elements. You're watching all of this creative stuff, right, with a very young quarterback that has nowhere near the skill set of Russell. And, they're moving the ball and getting a lead on you and doing what they need to do in their building to take a lead. And you're the one just sitting in the pocket, just sitting there with very few options. And when Russell feels, here's what Russell needs, and here's what was encouraging in the preseason. I know Pete's going to say this in 2 hours. In the preseason, remember that pocket in front of him. Do you remember the space with old Fluker and that just some of that wall that was presented in the middle? What Daniel Jeremiah said that he now evaluates offensive guards with. Can you stand your ground, man? Can you give? Can you hold the point? How important that is with all these speed rushers off the edge. And I think Russell felt yesterday, Sweezy struggled a bunch. Right, Sweezy struggled as much as Jermaine Defetti struggled, and he just felt the whole wall squeezed in on him. So if that's the case, get out, to Marcus's point. Get out. Sprint right option and speed option and movement passes and play action outside the pocket. And to just have him sitting there and taking sack after sack after sack after sack was, man, it was a tough watch.
Especially while the running game was working. I mean, that's just design. The other part of it is the play calling of just simple run versus pass, and you're having success with one and not using it. 206-421-3776. Grab Jacob, who's in Paulsbo. Hi, Jacob. Good morning.
Oh, sorry, Jacob.
Jacob dropped. All right, let's grab Don in Idaho Falls on line four. What's up, Don?
Hey, I just would meet with Pete this morning. I'd say,
let Kaluna bubble less and faster. Let's get that Schottenheimer in line. I think Pete's philosophy works. Let's implement it. Let's do it.
A very interesting headline. Thank you, Don, for the phone call. Very interesting. I just showed this to you, Salk. A very interesting headline for the win, the USA Today today.
Today, this morning.
That Pete chose philosophy over Russell Wilson and the hire of Brian Schottenheimer. I mean, it's a huge headline coming off of that game last night. The USA Today and For the Win, kind of their football aspect and a little bit more of their opinion, that Pete Carroll chose philosophy over Russell Wilson in the hiring of Brian Schottenheimer. I can't watch that game last night and say that in any way, shape, or form. That's not true. If the philosophy was to run the ball and be a run team, then that's not what we saw last night. You've seen now back-to-back weeks in the first half of games, 3rd-and-1 and 3rd-and-2. What are you? 3rd-and-1, 3rd-and-2, what are you? You have their ample opportunity. How many times do you tell me the managers love the opportunity when they get a chance to have a voice or get a chance to go yell at an umpire or get a chance to actually lay down the law in a clubhouse? Like, you have your opportunities in back-to-back weeks, early in the game.
And both times. You decide you're either going to pass or, as they did yesterday, come out in 5 wide and not even threaten run in third and short. It boggles my mind. 206-421-3776. Grab Josh and Kennewick. What would you say to Coach Carroll this morning?
Yeah, first I just want to apologize to Lydia. I didn't mean to call her a coward on Twitter last night.
You called all of us cowards.
Actually.
Yeah, it was the Air Your Grievances hashtag. I thought I'd get a Costanza feel to the tweet. Okay. Didn't come off that way. I apologize.
That's so nice. Thank you.
Yeah, well, as someone in the mental health field, I feel like you guys do a great job. You're not cowards. You bring everything to the forefront. You do great. So,
all right. Well, thank you.
Anyways, with the whole Pete thing, I would definitely ask him about his messaging. You know, saying we're turning, I think instilled maybe more hope that we should have had versus, like, maybe having more of a realistic look at it and would give him a little bit more, you know, grace, I guess, and patience of what they're working on right now. Because right now, people are mad at his coaching abilities, but I think he's still a great coach.
You know what's interesting? Thank you for the phone call, my man. What's interesting here is that we can very easily, and we will, expend a lot of energy on everything. When you lose, you focus on everything you did not do. Right? Pete Carroll, though, is a defensive-minded coach. Pete Carroll sits in a lot of those defensive meetings. Pete Carroll, I'm sure, spent a bunch of time with Akeem King last night and getting ready for that game the day before. And, hey, man, just building him up. And Shaquille Griffin and these safeties and Michael Kendricks. And, man alive, did they do some amazing things on that side of the ball. I really thought after that opening 95-yard touchdown drive, like, three and out, this thing could be 14, 20, 27, like it could have gotten away from them, and it didn't.
No, their defense kept them in the game long enough and allowed the offense to make the mistakes that it did. And this is why, look, it's such a weird game because there's so many places you can point to. Yeah, I can absolutely point at some of the ineptitude in the offense for the first 3 quarters. But, Brock, at the end of the day, it's a one-score game and Russell Wilson has the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
I am not, and I'll tell you more about it at 8 o'clock. I'm not going to sit here and kill Russell Wilson for those 6 sacks. I'm not. But I will absolutely all day kill him for what he did with the pick six. It can't happen. You are what they are counting on in that moment in a one-score game to lead your team down the field and be a hero. That's what franchise quarterbacks do. And now we're 2 weeks in a row. We're given a one-score game late. Russell Wilson's had the ball with a chance and has unfortunately turned it over once because of a careless view on the snap, and then yesterday because of a careless pick six where he stared at Penny and eventually threw it directly to Amukamara for the pick six. I want to ask you about that play in particular.
Oh, I got a lot of
details. What the heck could have possibly happened?
I can't wait.
On that play in Blue 42 next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for Coors Light's Blue 42. In the aftermath of a difficult loss yesterday, Seahawks now 0-2 on the season, and the offense getting the lion's share of the blame on this one, Brock. As I said, I kind of handle Russell Wilson not holding, not throwing the ball and keeping it and taking sacks and everything that happened early in the game. But at the end of the that's on the quarterback to do his thing. And unfortunately, cut five in his big opportunity, it ended in a hurry.
Russell takes the shotgun snap and throws it that way, and it's going to go the other way. Russell's going to chase him. Can he catch him? He gets there and slows him down, but it's going to be a touchdown. Prince Amukamara, 47 yards, interception return for a touchdown.
A touchdown for Prince Amukamara, Brock.
Yes.
What happened?
Yeah, let's walk through this in a number of different ways, because it was the same sideline. If you remember, well, you weren't here quite yet, but Matt Hasselbeck, you certainly heard the sound way back when in the playoff game versus the Green Bay Packers, was going to throw
that. Seattle's won the toss. We won the ball, we're going to score.
Yeah, and then their guy picked it off and ran it right down the sidelines, and it looked an awful lot like that. Very similar play. I want to break this down a couple different ways, Mike. You've said that he stared it down. I would contend that. On that play, you don't stare anything down. That is a reactionary play. That ball is in the shotgun, and it is to you and out of your hand before you could possibly even stare it down. And I want to so I would challenge that point a little bit. Number two, when we're – don't give me that face.
You're wrong.
Mike, you can't stare down a hitch route.
He was.
No, you take the ball.
He was looking at it from the moment he dropped back.
Yeah, in super slow motion, you see that.
No, I saw it in full motion watching it live.
If you saw it in real time, you would say that is a bang-bang play. And yeah, obviously he's looking at it, okay, but that corner did not jump the route because Russell was looking at it. That corner jumped the route. Why'd the corner jump the route? He jumped the route because 99 out of 100 times when a corner is on a running back, that running back runs what route? When we're out here at minicamp and we're out here training camp, what route do running backs run when they're in
the
empty set?
They run the hitch.
They run a 6-yard hitch. That's what they run 99 out of 100 times. Russell Wilson, you have to look out there and know who's covering your running back. It's Prince Amukamara. What did Prince Amukamara do for 55 minutes in that game? He sat on every route. He sat right in the lap of even wide receivers. He sat on Brandon Marshall. Right? There was at no point did he turn and run on anything during that game. So if Prince Amukamara is sitting on Brandon Marshall, future Hall of Famer, what in the world do you think he's going to do on a hitch route to a running back where the running back runs that route 99 out of 100 times and, by the way, doesn't know how to run it? Right, if that's a wide receiver, Michael Bumpus was great in postgame. He sees Amukamara cheating, and that wide receiver is going to run to the inside shoulder of Amukamara. So if he's going to do that and jump, there's at least going to be a collision. Running backs don't know that. He's out there to run a little 6-yard hitch route. So you better be darn sure, Russell, the minute you take that snap, darn sure that corner has dropped back in his coverage. Because if he's flat-footed or he did what he did, which was jump the instant you took that snap, then that thing's going the other way. The critical error was Russell not reading the corner, not knowing a corner was on Chris Carson, and not then knowing further that a Prince Amukamara was going to pull the trigger, was going to guess, was going to jump that route, because 99 of 100 times, that is the exact thing that running backs do out there.
Jeez.
So all of those things factor in a matter of, what, I don't know, 1.5 seconds.
And during that 1.5 seconds, he was staring at him the entire way, so it's really odd that he didn't notice all of that. Question number two. How good was Michael Kendricks?
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
How impressive was that?
That was the best backup linebacking effort we've seen in 10 years, and the guy's been here 3 days. And I say that. And
well,
he
maybe
played,
that's because he's a starting caliber linebacker.
He is. There's no question. He played 54 of their 66 snaps when he was out, where the other 12 times they went to their three safety, their quasi-big nickel package. I don't know if Pete's going to give you that credit or not, but I love that package as well. But when he was in there, just watch him jump routes. He nearly had the same thing, a little flat route. It's the same thing when a back comes out in there. What are they going to do 90% of the time? They're going to run a flat route. Michael Kendricks has played ball, so he can process, and then he can react, and he can do all of that full speed. Nearly had the pick there. Nearly had a pick on a little tight end stick route that he breaks up, and then so perfectly timed his blitz. And he is made to blitz. That is what all the Pro Football Focus guys and all the scouts will tell you. This guy is a tremendous blitzer because he's under 6 foot tall. He knows how to disguise, and then he knows how to absolutely explode through the hole. Man, I hope Michael Kendrick's not suspended by this league, because he is going to help this team over the course of a season with KJ and with Bobby, not just as like a security blanket. They're going to find a way to get him on the field because he plays.
He takes
phenomenal.
A snap. Here comes a blitz. Trubisky gets hit in the backfield. He goes down. Michael Kendricks gets there. He is jumping. His defensive pals are jumping. And that time, Trubisky never had a chance. a loss of 12. He drops back, and there is Michael Kendricks in his grill.
Pretty good. Question number three. Was anybody open in this game?
I just texted Joe Tessitore. Right? I thought Joe was awesome last night.
Yeah, he's good.
His voice for Monday Night Football, his love and passion and zeal for it is off the charts. I mean, this is his dream job of everything that Joe Tessitore wanted to do in his life. And parents were immigrants to this country, self-made, worked his tail. This was his dream, and you feel it when he comes on the air. This is what he's built to do, and he loves it. Booger McFarland is fun. He does a great job in the Boogermobile down there. And Witten was a little bit better this game, and I think is going to grow in some of that role thrown into the mix as an analyst. But that's the one thing I texted Joe. I said, hey, man, the one thing I'm curious about is we saw so little of the full field views. Right, the one time that Witten drew it on the little double end, he was right. The spacing was a total mess between Brandon Marshall and Lockett. And by the time Russell came off of it, it's too late. Unlike the previous game, Mike, where I was really harsh on Russell on a couple third downs where you've just got to trust and throw, I didn't see much of that. Now, to be fair, there weren't many views that gave us the full field, and I've got to dig into the coach's tape a little bit more. But this was not, to me, a situation where there were just guys running free, you know. And unfortunately, you know, the one thing Brandon's going to use is body, but there's not going to be a ton of separation. David Moore still feels like a young guy that's just not exploding on the scene. Jerron Brown, at little space, kind of falls down a few times. Disley was awesome, but he's not going to be a separator creator. So where is that? Where is that? It's Doug. He's not there. It's a little bit of Tyler. And he catches another touchdown in back-to-back weeks with big plays, but that is certainly something this offense is still searching for.
All right, there you go. That is Coors Light's Blue 42. Three questions for Brock every day at 7:45. I really would be curious because Russell's going to get crushed for that.
Yeah.
And maybe there are some plays where he's got to throw it away and take an incomplete.
Yep.
But it sure didn't look like he was missing open receivers and just didn't want to throw them.
No.
Every time you got any sort of view from behind Russell, it's like, wow, I wouldn't have thrown the ball to anybody either. That guy's not open. And so he's holding it and he's trying to do something, and he does seem a little uncomfortable with the offense.
Yep.
But I sure didn't get the sense that he was missing open receivers.
Yeah, and I don't mean to like get you on the defensive with the stare down, obviously. From the time he took that snap and threw it, that's where his eyes were. But Prince Amukamara made that play not based on Russell staring it down. He made that play
that
on
may
his
be true.
Total pre-snap.
But while he's staring him down, how does he not notice the print? Like, what? There's four receivers to the other side of the field.
Yes.
Is nothing open over there? You would rather throw a six-yard hitch
He baited him, man. He saw 8 yards of cushion.
Then he got suckered.
He did. He totally got suckered.
I
would challenge whether it's semantics or not, the stare down, because there are times you stare things down and all the coverage comes over there. That one was instantaneous, got baited. The separation was there pre-snap, but, man, post-snap, you got to see it before you throw it, and Prince Amukamara taught him that lesson.
All right, good stuff. Coming up next, our takeaways from this game, and we'll include yours as well. Got all of you guys still on the phone. We'll see if we can get to a bunch of these calls. 206-421-3776. Brock, if you had been in my house with me.
Oh, boy.
And you could have been there for one exact moment of the game.
I know which one it was.
I think you would have laughed heartily. That and more next on Brock and Salk.